I'm speaking today with Virginia McDavid, who is the Democratic candidate for State House in District 138 in Harris County. First question I like to ask people is, why are you running for this office?
Well, Charles, I'm basically running because of my dissatisfaction with our leadership out of Austin, and I don't really feel like they have enough ordinary voices and forward-thinking approaches to tackling some of Texas's problems. So I want to provide that ordinary voice and try and help move the state forward, which we rank bad we rank high in too many of the bad things and low in too many of the good things, and we need to reverse that trend.
Okay. Now, your husband Mark ran for this seat in 2006. What would you say that you learned from his experience, and how does that affect your campaign this year?
Well, we learned how underorganized the district is, for starters. The district that he ran in is a new district per the 2002 redistricting line. So Ken Yarborough had held this seat up until 2002, had been the Democratic rep for 10 years, but the lines drastically changed. They drew out some African-American precincts, threw in some more suburban precincts in Spring Branch, and there were no regional clubs in the area. We have since, within the last year and a half, helped form a West Side Club with the Spring Branch Democrats and an East Side Club with the Oak Forest Area Democrats, and I think that's helping to go a long way. So there have been significant demographic changes in the district, but again, it's just been drastically underorganized.
Okay. Fundraising was an issue when Mark ran in 2006. How are you doing on that front?
Well, I'm fortunate that I have a job where I have flexible hours. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and so I've been there 18 years, so I can get rid of many of my trips and hold a pretty productive schedule when I do choose to fly. So I've had more time off to run a fundraising campaign. I've hired a firm named Stanley Garrison Associates out of Austin, and I have a finance director here on the ground out of Galveston that drives up several days a week, and we work a program, and it takes a lot of systematic planning, and I wish I had more yeses and nos and I had more people returning my phone calls, but we're working the plan and we're doing what we should be doing, but it's always a challenge, especially in a state that doesn't have contribution caps. Even a state rep race can get incredibly expensive.
Okay. Now, as you say, you're a flight attendant. That's probably not an occupation that's very well represented in the Texas legislature. Mm-hmm. How does that experience, how do you think that experience would shape your viewpoint in the legislature?
Well,
what do you think being a flight attendant brings to the table?
Well, Charles, I learned the definition of being a public servant every day I go to work. I encounter about 300 or so passengers on a full flying day, and my 18 years at Continental has really taught me what it's like to be on the ground and a working Texan. I'm a hardworking Texan like millions of other Texans, and again, our voice is shut out. I've suffered a workers' comp injury. How many state legislators can say that they've suffered a workers' comp injury and they know firsthand what the decimation of a workers' compensation laws have done to workers in this state? I've also been active in my union, and I think those skills have come in handy. I'm a CPA by training, so it's not like that's the only skill or occupation I've worked at. I have an accounting degree from Texas Tech, and I've had my own small business, so I bring that to the table as well. But one thing I noticed early on and why I started flying in the first place is I didn't have the temperament to be an accountant and sit behind a cubicle 8 hours a day, and I like working with people, and I like advocacy work. That's why I've enjoyed my union work. I like helping my fellow flight attendants with due process and getting a fair shake and improving their rights and their voice in the workplace. And we need to do the same thing at the state government level and improve workers' voices in state government.
Well, as someone with a background in organized labor, what one thing would you like to see the Texas legislature do to improve the lot of people, working people?
Well, Texas is one of the few states, Charles, that doesn't require workers' comp insurance, and it's kind of incredible that we don't. And so we need that kind of protection for workers. I know that when we closed the Los Angeles space several years ago, when my airline did some downsizing, some of the flight attendants were very upset that Texas doesn't have what's called an SDI program, or a state disability insurance plan. We have it in New Jersey. California has it. Many states in the union have it, and that's just an example of what we need to do to help protect workers. But And obviously, to other ways to protect workers, we can't overlap any jurisdiction that OSHA has, but we've seen a lot of problems happen in the petrochemical area with some explosions and access to the plant facilities that has not been granted to state regulators, and we need to tighten up the regulations to protect workers and protect consumers. Okay. They both go hand in hand.
All right. School finance is always an issue every time the legislature gets together. Last time they did something about this, it wound up creating the new business margins tax, which people are not very happy with these days. They say there's too many loopholes and it's not projected to raise enough money to pay for the property tax cuts that came along with it. What would you like to see the legislature do with the business margins tax?
Well, Charles, it's been kind of an experiment. I know a lot of CPAs that have been frustrated with the process. This was the first year that they were actually due, and you're right, they're not meeting expectations in helping fund our schools or these property tax cuts that went into effect. We have a complicated problem here in Texas, since we're one of eight states that doesn't have any kind of state income tax. Revenue enhancement can be always an issue. We are very dependent on property taxes, and the Robin Hood program has in some ways hurt some school districts. We have a school district here in District 138, Spring Branch ISD. The superintendent recently issued a press release saying that the new school finance program was going to bankrupt its school district by 2012. They've had to dip into their fund balance in the tune of like $12 million this past year, and they're upset about it. What's really a big problem, Charles, is the state is contributing less and less and less to public education. 20 plus years ago, they contributed well over 50% towards public ed, and now it's down below 38%. So I can understand the state saying, you're a rich school district, the state's not going to be able to help you out as much as this adjacent school district that's not doing so well is poor. But because the state itself doesn't really have a lot of revenue sources, they're basically robbing from Peter to pay Paul to help fund the situation. My opponent was recently heard at a super neighborhood group saying that school finance was already a done deal. It just needed a little bit of tweaking, and I think he's wrong. School finance is never a done deal, and we're always going to have to look at better ways to finance our schools. Another problem with school finance, my opponent has touted a property appraisal cap bill every session he's been in office, and it continually fails. And one of the issues I have with his appraisal cap bill is it caps school taxes and not city and county taxes. So I don't understand why funding city and county government is more important than educating our kids, but I don't think that's very fair.
I think the reason why it's done that way is because cities and counties have been organized enough to defeat that.
Absolutely.
Anyway, the college education and the cost of college education has also been a hot issue lately. As you know, the legislature in 2003 passed a law allowing public universities in Texas to set their own tuition in return for them getting less public money up front from the legislature. Tuitions have risen rapidly since then, and some people are calling for a return to the days of regulated tuition increases. What do you think about this?
Well, Charles, that's a big concern of mine. I went to college in the 80s and paid anywhere between $4 and $16 a credit hour and borrowed money at 4% interest, and those days are long gone. My opponent voted for that bill in 2003, and I think it was a wrong vote. We've seen tuition increase about 112% in the last 5 years since that went into effect. Some of the colleges are happy that because they're not getting the same amount of state funding they had in the past, it's able for them to make up that revenue loss. But what it's doing is making college more and more affordable for the average middle-class family. We need to address that situation, and we also need to look at that to the extent that it's going to stay deregulated. We're also seeing staffers at these schools and university systems not getting part of the piece of the pie. A lot of the educators and faculty members in these schools haven't seen raises, so even though they're seeing tuition go up, they're not getting any part of that. So it's also a concern of mine trying to represent a Houston district here that University of Houston get proper state funding to become a Tier 1 research institute, which it's not. And so we need to look at more creative ways besides making college unaffordable to fund our public education system, including higher ed.
Okay. Health insurance, again, another hot topic. Also from 2003, the legislature took some steps that wound up cutting a lot of people off of the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, during time of, you know, budget austerity. Since then, some steps have been taken to make it easier for people to get on CHIP, and some of the roles have come up somewhat, but not to that same level. What would you like to see the legislature do regarding CHIP?
Well, I'm glad to see some of those funds restored, and my opponent voted for those cuts in 2003, and I think it was a wrong vote. One of the other problems with the CHIP funding was they privatized the qualification for getting on the CHIP rolls, and we had problems with the company that had the contract on getting children enrolled. They didn't understand how the system worked, and that was a big part of the problem.
You're referring to the Accenture deal?
Absolutely, yes, where we saw thousands of state employees laid off who knew what they were doing, and a contract turned over to a company that didn't exactly know what it was doing. But we need to make further changes. For every dollar we spend on social services like CHIP funding, the federal government can pitch in anywhere from like $2.50 to $2.60. So we're not maximizing or drawing down all the benefits we could see at the federal level. But beyond just funding insurance for children, I think there are other systemic problems with our health care system in this state. As you know, Texas ranks worst in the number of health insured in the country, and Houston, that rate runs at about 30%. So it's kind of ironic that we have some of the best health care in the country along Fannin Street, yet one out of three Houstonians don't even have access to that health care. We need to look at some more creative ways to provide affordable health insurance to our residents. One might be a county coverage plan that the hospital districts can offer, and we could start out with perhaps a county coverage plan offered to public employees where we can minimize what taxpayers are having to pay to provide health care insurance to public employees and try and put more of that money in their pockets.
Since you brought up the Accenture deal, that's something that that labor in the state has certainly been interested in, since, as you say, a lot of the state employees that were dropped were union members. Given that, you know, Accenture has lost the contract and the state is trying to figure out what it wants to do next, what do you think should be done? How do we get back to a point where the people who are handling food stamps and other benefits are the people who know what they're doing?
Well, Charles, that's a good question, and I think some of the pundits on the other side of the aisle have acted like privatization is the answer to everything, and it's obviously not the answer to everything. In addition to Accenture having taken over some of these contracts, we saw a bill passed earlier this decade where CPS services in this state were supposed to be privatized. Well, there are counties in this state that can't handle child abuse cases. Maybe a county as big as Harris County that has nonprofits like DePelching are in a better position to have nonprofits or private entities that can handle some of those functions. But it was just a real crime to see that counties, the 254 counties in the state, were required to privatize services that it was impossible to do. Accenture has lost its contract, which is a good thing, but it shouldn't have taken public outcry and a disastrous implementation of a system that didn't work to get them to lose their contract. I don't think that every government function should be politicized, and when you privatize a lot of government functions, that's exactly what happens, because the people who get the contracts are people who are lining the pockets of the politicians to give them those contracts, and that's wrong. We need to probably look at beefing up our state system and focus it back on public employees where it should have been in the first place.
The incumbent in 138, Representative Bohack, one of the things I recall him doing in recent years is pushing bills to more tightly regulate food vendors who drive around in trucks, you know, the mobile food vendors. That caused some controversy, as I recall. They didn't much care for that. Can you comment on that at all?
I can indeed. I think part of that effort was to put these small business owners out of business. A lot of the civic clubs and groups in the Spring Branch area see these mobile taco vendors as eyesores, and they want to get rid of them. And perhaps the Restaurant Association has had something to do with that. But what's really ironic about this bill that got introduced, first of all, there wasn't any funding to back it up. But second of all, it was pretty onerous. It was going to require these taco vendors to get daily inspections and daily cleanings from set up commissaries that the government would approve. I don't think it's been implemented like the bill that was passed. But it's kind of interesting, Charles, because as a flight attendant for a major airline, I've never had any kind of training on food preparation or how I serve food to you on the plane. And it's kind of ironic that these taco vendors are being held to a higher standard than even someone like me who's been serving food and drinks for 18 years. So I think that our standards should be consistent, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's someone serving you a cocktail or a meal on a plane, or someone serving you a taco out of a mobile taco stand. We do need tight regulations, but the other irony is that there weren't any health complaints about these mobile taco vendors. There were no health complaints to warrant this legislation. So they're creating a solution where there really was no problem. And I think part of it's just blatant racism. Charles, this district is about 45% Hispanic. It's going through some significant changes, and it's manifesting itself all over the area if you drive through the neighborhoods. And some people want to go back to a different day and time. We heard of a PowerPoint presentation presented at a civic club area meeting in the Spring Branch area recently, and they took pictures of the mobile taco stands and pictures of the schools in the area and said, this is how it used to be. This is what our neighborhood looks like now. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to embrace diversity and do what we can to help our small businesses.
Okay. So when people go to the polls on November 4th and they come to your race, how do you want them to think about it?
Well, Charles, I want them to remember Virginia McDavid for state representative. I'm the Democratic nominee and have a pretty simple platform, safe streets, sharp minds, sound bodies. Safe streets, we need to be smart on crime, not just tough, and figure out better ways to deal with the mentally ill and the drug addicted. Sharp minds, we need to strengthen our public schools and not siphon away public dollars like my opponent voted for in the 05 session and make higher education more affordable. And sound bodies, we need to clean up our air and water and make healthcare more affordable.
Virginia McDavid, thank you very much for talking to me
today. Thank you, Charles. Appreciate the opportunity.